You are listening to episode 77, Nurturing Parent Engagement in Play Therapy with Claire Nulleton.
Welcome to Play Therapy Community Podcast, providing connection, information, and inspiration to child therapists all around the world. Here's your host, a licensed psychotherapist, a registered play therapist, and my mom, Jackie Flynn.
This episode is brought to you by EMDR and Play Therapy Integration Support. Are you an EMDR-trained therapist that works with children and teens? I'd love to help you integrate play therapy techniques throughout all eight phases so that your child and teen clients can fully experience the immense healing power of EMDR therapy. Visit JackieFlynnConsulting.com to check out my free webinars, EMDRIA-approved courses, certification opportunities, case consultation options, individual and group, and much more. Children are not miniature adults, so working with them in a developmentally appropriate way can make a world of difference. Again, visit JackieFlynnConsulting.com.
Hi, Claire. Thank you so much for being on the Play Therapy Community Podcast. You know, I'm a huge fan of yours, and the work that you do is amazing, so it feels like such an honor. So let me have you just tell people who you are and what you do.
Okay. Well, I'm so glad to be on here. I always love coming on, Jackie, so thanks for inviting me. So I'm Claire Melantine. I'm a registered play therapist supervisor. And for those of you who aren't familiar with my work, I speak and train all over the globe on attachment and trauma issues in childhood, specifically how to treat these issues using play therapy. I've written several books and articles over the years on different aspects of play therapy and how we can incorporate that in the, you know, treatment of childhood disorders. So my latest book, my most recent book, is Attachment-Centered Play Therapy, and that kind of has been my baby. Like, that's the model that I've developed over the last several years of really assessing and understanding and treating families who have been experienced through different traumas and disruptions in their attachment, and really being able to understand this from a unique, I think, you know, attachment-based lens. And so that's me. So I'm a clinician. I'm the director of child and adolescent services at Wasatch Family Therapy in Salt Lake City, Utah. And I'm an adjunct professor at USC, and a mom of three teenagers. And, you know, we just kind of keep it going over here. My hands are in always a couple different pots at one time.
You're a busy girl. And I know that you were recently on my Innovative Child Therapy Symposium, just talking about play therapy in general is one of the most viewed segments, the videos in there. So, and you
provided
learning activity. Yeah, it was great.
That's awesome.
Thank you. Now today, we're going to delve right into parent consultation. And I know that can be a little vague. It definitely looks and feels a little bit different based on the style of therapy that you provide and what setting you work in. So let's just jump right in. What are some of your thoughts and tips or techniques related to parent consultation with play therapy?
Well, I think that this is actually a critical part of your assessment and the treatment process, because this is my required first session visit, is whoever's in that parental capacity, whether it's a guardian, the adoptive parent, if it's a long-term foster parent, or the biological parent, they are required to meet with me for that first appointment without the child present, because I want to be able to have an open, candid conversation about what their concerns and worries are, as well as I start working and assessing on their attachment styles and their attachment history themselves as the caregiver, because that impacts absolutely everything that's going to happen in treatment.
Yeah.
And so we have this first opportunity to really make the parent feel like they can trust us and that this is a safe haven for them just as much as we need to provide that for the child.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like a bigger picture, whole view, and it sounds like you're creating a relationship with the parent as well, so that they feel like they're part of the process.
Absolutely, because in my perspective, like, this is the world according to Claire.
Yes.
But I truly believe that lasting change cannot happen unless we're involving parents into the play therapy process. Oh,
yes.
And so, yeah, you know, that's an unrealistic expectation to give a five-year-old that they're going to be the change agent in their family system, because they have no power to do this.
Yeah.
And so if we're not inviting the parent in and helping them to become a resource to their child, a child's progress, I mean, they can only move as far as the parent will give permission for them to move in their healing process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So when you say the word system, it's not just the kid, it's the whole family, and the parent is a big piece of that. So I know what really made me want to, well, one of many things that made me want to ask you to be on here is you posted recently something about parent consultation, and the image was a puzzle. And I like felt it in my body. I was like, that image goes with it so accurately, because they are a huge piece of the puzzle, and it's not complete if you don't have the parent there. And it can be vague, though. And you did say that you get information on the parent's attachment. And I know that's right at the roots. That gives you a lot of understanding and probably guides your parent consultation. What does the frequency and the duration look like after that first meeting with the parent? Like, how do you engage in parent consultation following that first one?
So depending upon what the treatment needs are, and as well as what the relational or attachment patterns are between parent and child, really determines the extent to which, you know, that it's appropriate to involve them in treatment. But I am a firm believer that we have got to build bridges with parents.
Yeah.
And so I meet with the parent without the child every 4 to 6 weeks throughout the course of the child's treatment, because
okay.
The parent needs to have a safe place to come and talk about what their concerns are, what their parenting challenges have been, where they can learn more positive-based parenting strategies,
mm-hmm.
as well as I want to help them and be empowered to take control of themselves, as well as to build these bridges of connections with their children. And so through these parent consultations, you know, we're doing a wide variety of things simultaneously,
mm-hmm.
but my goal is to build enough trust with the parent that we have a therapeutic alliance,
mm-hmm.
just as much as I have a therapeutic alliance with their child, so that ultimately I can bring them together and we can work through whatever needs to be repaired or resolved or strengthened. And this way it's not so scary or foreign to be invited to come into the play therapy room for the parent, because they're used to being with me already and hopefully see me as their advocate,
mm-hmm.
just as much as I am going to be for their child.
Oh gosh, that's amazing. I'm thinking that probably feels like a safe space, and many times parents are reluctant to share because they feel judged. And really the fact of the matter is that, or the matter of fact, whatever how you say it, parenting is hard. It's so difficult. So all of us make mistakes and mess ups and stuff, but just the way that you're describing it, it feels like, you know, it's safe and like you listen with empathic ear and just sharing parenting strategies in that same space that their kid is also having therapy in. It seems so powerful. And it seems like you probably get a little bit more participation with that approach as well, engagement.
I like to think that it works. It's what I require. No.
Yeah.
I think, like, I don't know, I have so much empathy for parents.
Yeah.
I think being a parent, you know, of myself, like, for those, you know, I have 3 teenagers in my home right now, and all my kids are 2 years apart. So we've been busy for a long time in my house. And I think, you know, like, I'm supposed to be somebody that, like, knows stuff. And there's lots of times as a mom where I'm like, I have no idea what to do with you.
Yeah.
Or I've tried everything that I know is not working. And so, you know, and then I think about, like, the privilege that I carry, like, you know, having access to resources, both intellectually as well as, you know, financially and in my community, and all of these things that have just, you know, that really are a part of my privilege that I'm fortunate to have. And so many of the parents that we work with, they don't have that same, they may be more affluent than us, they may be less affluent than us, but mm-hmm. having these lifelines and these connections, you know, because as a parent, I'm able to call a friend or call my sister or call my mom,
yeah.
you know, and just say, I'm drowning in this.
Mm-hmm.
And know that that's a safe relationship that I can go to.
Yeah.
And so many of the parents that we work with, they, one, are being the change agents in their own family story, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones that are out there like, you know what? I'm going to stop this intergenerational cycle of abuse or substance abuse or mm-hmm. poverty or dysfunction, whatever. Like, this is up to me, and I'm doing this without a roadmap. Mm-hmm. And because I'm breaking these different cycles, I also am losing my support system. I'm really by myself and trying yeah. to leave it. And I think when we can remember that as play therapists and as clinicians in general, hopefully that can open up our heart space so much more for the parents so that we're not judging and shaming them for doing the best that they can do and the best they know how to do right now.
Yeah.
You know, but I think if we can open up that welcoming space inside of us, like, this is where magic happens. This is how healing happens. And what we're also providing for them is this, sometimes for the first time, a glimpse of what secure attachment can be like and feel like, so that they can then give that to their child and really change the family story.
Oh, I think of like Dr. Siegel's feel and felt, what you just described kind of sounds like in that relationship. I mean, the parenting strategies, all that are great. But maybe even on a deeper level, they feel like, hey, somebody's listening to me. Somebody's here for me. You make such a good point. Like, if they decide to break a cycle of abuse or whatever it is that they're going through, they may lose part of their support system. And then they are more on their own, and having that relationship with you or their therapist is just, it's vital. It's like a lifeline. You did say something that really made me think about, like, it gets messy as a parent. I know when I was a school counselor, here I had this meeting. I had been planning for like a month. We had all these people in there. I was a little nervous. I wore, you know, one of my nicer outfits. And then my kid comes through the door crying. Well, all of these people are there. And I was like, oh, they're looking to me for advice on their kid. And I got all this going on with my own kid. So sometimes imposter syndrome, because who am I to support a parent when I have my own messiness, my own real life struggles? Could you talk about that a little bit, about us, like, we're parents, many of us are parents as well, so we get it, and what that feels like to give advice on or support with something that may be showing up in your own life.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I love that you speak to that, you know, and I think that there is this awesome myth that therapists believe that just because they chose this profession, they should be immune from like the human experience and their own humanness.
Yeah.
Right? Because we should know these things. And because we know these things, like, our relationship should be perfect and our marriage should be perfect and our kids should be perfect. Like, and I think that, you know, that is one of the most freeing things you can give yourself, is that permission
yeah.
to accept that you're going to be human too, even if you're a therapist. Like, it doesn't negate one or the other.
Yeah.
And, you know, my personal mantra is, I've got to be a mom first and foremost. Because those little humans
yeah.
matter so much to me. Holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found, you know, throughout my professional career is there's been a lot of ebb and flow of what balance looks like,
yeah.
you know, and sometimes balance looks like I can be jet setting and speaking all over and home is good and, you know, things are falling into place. And other times it's like, wow, I'm having to push pause on this and I need to be home
mm-hmm.
because this little one needs me. So I'm not going anywhere for a while, you know, and I am staying home, or my, you know, and same thing with my partnership with my husband, of, we are such a good yin and yang for each other. And he's so supportive and carries such a big load, especially, you know, when they were little, so that I could do all these different things professionally. But I think recognizing that it's okay to put you as a priority, it's okay to put your children as a priority.
Yes.
It's okay then, and we model how to do this. It's kind of this crazy thing, but we're still modeling for our clients of what is healthy and how to find balance. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, this idea of like, kind of like giving your soul out there to the universe, like through this acceptance of just because I'm a therapist doesn't mean I'm not going to need therapy. Mm-hmm. Just because I'm a therapist doesn't mean my kids are never going to struggle.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
because I'm a therapist, it doesn't mean my relationship isn't going to go through rough patches, or it may even end. Mm-hmm. And that has no bearing on the quality of work I can do as a clinician. It just means I'm human in the process of it all simultaneously. And I am a big advocate that we have to be willing to buy what we sell. And I'm so grateful for the therapists that I've gone to over my lifetime. And I'm so grateful for the therapists that have helped me when I've been stuck in parenting moments of like, I don't know what to do. You know, like I'm lost in this. And I recognize my own stuff is coming up. Like, how can I be a healthy mom and still show up for work when I feel like I'm drowning? Or, you know, and I think that when you can come to that place where you can just accept your humanness in the process and just embrace it, you don't have to worry about being more than what you are, because what you are is good enough just as it is.
Oh my gosh, you've got like tears in my eyes. That's incredible, especially that part of that these little humans, they have to come first, and how we are modeling for our clients that parent-child relationship just through our own actions. And even like in your relationship, like if all that tumbles, it's going to affect your clients, you know, anyway. So, wow, that's beautiful. And like realizing that humanness happens to us all, and it's supposed to, and we're not supposed to be immune, or nor should we be immune, you know? So good. So good. I'm like at a loss for words. I think one thing too that comes to mind is the boundaries. So like being able to say, hey, I can't work on weekends. I don't work on weekends. That time is family time, and I need to protect that, or I need that for my family. That they are watching and kind of, you know, learning from how we're acting as well. So keeping those boundaries are also healthy for our clients, and definitely healthy for us and our families. Now, we're almost out of time, but I want to make sure that we touch on limited confidentiality. I know, like when we go to therapy, oh, and I do want to say something about our own therapy. Every good therapist like has a good therapist. I've heard that. I love going to therapy. I love it, love it, love it. I wish I could just do it all the time, but I have one of my colleagues that recommended somebody, and it's life-changing. So for the therapists listening to this that are maybe thinking that, why would I need therapy? I'm a therapist. I'm supposed to have all the answers. It's not about answers. It's about processing and connection and healing. So that piece is big.
Well, and I think just piggybacking on that too, like the reality is we hold lots of hard stories as therapists. Mm-hmm. And when you hear story after story after story after story of trauma,
yeah.
The reality is you are going to experience secondary trauma, regardless of the quality of work that you're doing with your clients. Yeah. It's just part of being human. And even if you're feeling like, hey, my life is in order, like I feel really confident about my relationships, I feel confident about my work. I think sometimes, especially those of us who specialize more in like the trauma work, and if you're working with humans, yes, you're working with trauma,
yeah.
Even if you didn't think that that's what you were signing up for, mm-hmm. But having a place to go and even just process what it means to be the holder and to hold the hard stories and to be the container for these people who need you so much, that is going to prevent burnout. It's going to prevent compassion fatigue. It's going to help you to be able to be present day in and day out in this work that we do.
Yeah. Yeah. What comes to mind is like residual. I know recently I was so curious about somatic therapy, and I was feeling it build up, especially during the middle of April, around right after COVID had hit.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to search out some online somatic therapy. So I did a Google search. And then as part of like the EMDR work, one of the pieces is create an image that represents the worst part. Well, with this, when he was doing the somatic, you know, he had me fill it in my body, and images from years ago were just flashing through like a quick movie. And it was, I mean, I literally like had snot coming out of my nose, and I, it's just like very emotional. And then afterwards I felt like tired and drained. And the next day, like things felt much calmer. It was this big release. But when you say we're the container, I didn't feel that buildup. In fact, I didn't even realize that I even remembered some of those things, but I had very vivid images that just passed through. They haven't even like crossed my mind since that session. So I think you really hit the nail on the head when you say that, you know, it adds up over years, even if our life is in order.
Yeah.
It can show
up. How can it not?
Yeah. Yeah, the stories that we hear, and you say, you know, if we're working with humans, we're working with trauma. Trauma is distressing or disturbing events. I don't think anybody gets out of the experience without some distressing or disturbing events. No, I've had a couple today.
Right, like what a boring life, right? No.
yeah. So yes. Just real quickly before we finish up, I want to make sure that we talk about the limited confidentiality. I know the work that the kids do with us still has confidentiality, but when we work with parents, speaking to them in a way that keeps them kind of attuned, how the treatment plan's going, but doesn't disclose too much information. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Absolutely, because I think that that's a really important part of the therapeutic relationship and process. And so really going back to that first appointment, that parent consultation, I actually talk about this specifically to parents and with parents, what confidentiality means for their minor child and why it's important, as well as helping them to and reassuring them that you will always know what's going on and what's important, and you will be part of the healing process. Because they love their kids. I mean, that's why they're there. You know, even if they're in that court ordered phase of like, you have to be there. The reality is you love your child. You may not know the best way to parent the child just yet because we only know what we've been taught.
Yes.
But I think that this is where, again, modeling the security to the parent and offering reinsurance. And then I have the same conversation with the child and parent together, where we talk about, you know, and I'll use a playful example of, you know, help, you know, what we say, you know, what we talk about stays in here with me. And we're always going to give your parent an update. So let's say you're really mad and you call your mom a booger face. I'm probably not going to tell her that you called her a booger face, but we are going to talk about the mad feelings. And you know, and so maybe on that day, like where you have these big angry mad feelings, one of the things that we may talk about with your mom or your dad is that there are big angry mad feelings. And then here's something that you guys can do at home to help with them. So maybe I'm going to give you guys a can of bubbles to take home, and you guys can blow bubbles together and have bubble blowing contests to see who can do the longest, slowest, biggest one, as well as the fastest, quickest, tiny one, right? And so you're offering in both parenting coping strategies and child coping strategies, as well as building in the possibility for relationship building simultaneously, while also protecting the sanctity of confidentiality. And I'm a big believer in that we do this where we're protecting the nitty-gritty, right?
Yeah.
And the more vulnerable parts as they need to be protected, but we're not shutting out the parent, because if we don't involve them and we don't teach to them and we don't include them, again, nothing's going to change in the family home, even if you're doing such awesome work in the parent in the playroom with the child. And so being mindful about, you know, the other part of confidentiality that I train people in is when you're talking about confidentiality and the limits of that with the child that you're working with, use clear and specific language.
And
don't gloss over it. So for example, I will go through and talk about each limit of like, if you tell me somebody's hurting your body physically, That means if they were punching, kicking, slapping, doing something to hurt your body, I would tell another helping grown-up to make sure your body was safe. I don't say I'm going to tell your parent, I'm not going to call the police, because that may not be a safe, healthy person or idea of what a helping person could be like, depending upon the community that you live in, what your past exposure and experiences have been, and the unfortunate reality of where we are right now, just in our world and our community with community policing. So I always refer to, when I'm needed to break confidentiality or report, I'm going to tell another helping grown-up, because that feels much safer than I'm going to tell your parent who may be perpetrating this, or I'm going to call the police who may be, that doesn't feel safe to you right now to have the police called. In fact, that would be more traumatizing.
Yeah.
And so I walk through each one and what the limits of this are. So you tell me that somebody was touching you or hurting you sexually, that means, right, and I'm going to use penis and vagina.
Yeah.
So what that means is, if somebody was touching your private parts, check in to make sure they know what that is.
Yeah.
Go back to appropriate genitalia, right? I'm going to do another helping grown up. And you just do this, you know, bit by bit.
Yeah.
And you can have a totally coherent conversation in 2 minutes. And then you can move on from there. But without explaining this and without explaining the limits of confidentiality, you may actually set yourself up to unintentionally cause harm. Because the parent and the child don't know what to expect from you if a disclosure is made.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're educating them, really. And then they get to choose what they share and what they don't, but it's not a big surprise or even a feeling like a betrayal if
right.
It has to be done. I love that you give us the words for that, because I think it can feel scary for everyone, including the clinician. When you have the words for it and you can front load it, like that this is part of my intake process and I do this with everybody, then it's just part of the process. It's not something so kind of vague or you know, touchy. Oh, so good. Excellent. Now we're almost out of time, but I know you do a lot of trainings, a lot of amazing trainings. You do webinars, and then I heard that you recently started up like a Q&A for clinicians, but then you have something for parents. So I just want to make sure that we get an opportunity to learn about any trainings that you have coming up or any opportunities to learn from you.
Awesome. Yeah. So I have a fall question and answer series that's one for parents only, as well as for all mental health clinicians. They don't need to be specific to play therapists, but we talk about different childhood disorders. So like, for example, this week, what is today? Today's on the 23rd, September 23rd, mm-hmm. We're talking about OCD and how to treat OCD and what that looks like when it shows up in young children and treating that through play therapy. And so this is a 90-minute question and answer where you can submit your questions to me, whatever they may be, you know, related to the topic of the week. And then we'll spend some time just discussing these and having a more intimate conversation around that. And so I have these bi-weekly scheduled. You can find the links to them on my website at clairemelantine.com.
Can you spell that?
Yeah.
Clairemelantine.com.
So it's C-L-A-I-R. M-E-L-L-E-N as in Nancy, T-H as in Henry, I-N as in Nancy. So
okay.
ClaireMelantine.com.
Okay.
And some of the things that we have coming up in October, we're talking about grief and loss and high conflict divorce. And then November, how to do group play therapy and the different challenges and fun things that can come from this. And then for parents, we have some parents beginning in October. I'm doing a bi-weekly parent meeting question mm-hmm. and answer where parents can come to me and ask whatever questions they may have on that topic yeah. of that day. And I think it's a great way to introduce child therapy and introduce, you know, going to seeking out some help for parenting in a really safe, normal, natural format. All of this is online. And to just, I think, especially for parents to feel that they're not alone and be able to network and communicate and connect with other parents, as well as when you're in the clinicians group, the same thing of being able to network and communicate and you know, build these bridges because this work is too big to do all by ourselves.
Oh, so true.
So much.
Yes. So ClaireMelantine.com. And I think about just those three topics that you mentioned, grief and loss, high conflict divorce, and group play therapy. All three of those are just biggies. That group play therapy, that sounds amazing. I think I'm going to take you up on that one. That's something that I think more so now than ever people need, you know, with all the extra stress. But now we have this online option that actually has some great benefits to it. So,
come play. It'll be so fun.
Well, thank you, Claire. I super appreciate this. And for those of you listening, this information, these links will be on our show notes at playtherapycommunity.com. And I super appreciate you joining us today. Thanks, Claire. Bye.
Thanks so much, Jackie. Take care.
You too.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Play Therapy Community Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for this episode and explore our growing members' library of play therapy-related resources at www.playtherapycommunity.com. Prepare to be informed, equipped, inspired, and supported.